From Aspen Public Radio, this is Curated, stories on the artists who visit and live in the Roaring Fork Valley. I'm Claire Woodcock, arts and culture reporter here at Aspen Public Radio. It is Monday, August 14th. Today we're talking about nature's impact on art making, how being in nature can inspire creation, because we live in one of the most beautiful places on the planet, and having the ability to capture and preserve the natural world through photographs and paintings is significant. On this week's episode, a local multimedia artist ventures into the woods and returns inspired to create. A photographer discusses old-school techniques to capturing the disappearing world of cattle ranching in Colorado. And a plein air painter talks through his process. Plus music from a Boulder-based Americana band and more details on what else is going on this week in the Valley. Thanks for tuning in and stay with me. Andy Korber owns the architecture and land use planning firm Land Plus Shelter. She's also a resident in this year's Artists in Wilderness program through the Wilderness Workshop. She's just returned from her time out in the woods, splitting that time in between Marble and Carbondale, and joins me in the studio now to talk epiphanies.
I stayed at the Chapin Wright Base Camp, Aspen Valley Land Trust holding in Marble, and it is 2 miles outside of town past Beaver Lake, just at the base of the North Lost Trail. So it's beautiful. It's on the edge of wilderness. The minute you start hiking, you're in wilderness. And a massive avalanche had ripped through there this spring. We had a late, wet, heavy spring just tore through this valley. And half a mile into the trail is obliterated by this pileup of aspen trees. And I spent about 45 minutes or so sort of picking through them, just trying to find the trail on the other side of this creek bed, basically covered in tree fall. And then was frustrated and was, oh, I need to relax, I need to get out, I need to be in the wilderness. And, you know, that horrible tick of your mind doing what it's doing. And I said, okay, well, I'm just going to sit down and draw the trees. And they started to become a pile of bodies and an avalanche and this incredible force, and I could sort of fall into it in a way that you do. And so this avalanche became that. And when I was done, because the mosquitoes were like destroying me, I got up and immediately saw the trail and then decided, well, I guess this is my subject. So I had gone in thinking about sort of patterns. I had been doing some abstract pieces that were patterns kind of on the theme of migration, and was thinking about herds. And I'm like, well, this is my herd. This is like this thundering herd of aspen trees that like crashed into me. And now I just started looking at them. And then the whole week when I was there, the deadfall around the area started to, I don't know, talk to me, be really obvious. There, I actually want to know, I need to talk to some kind of forester about this. Are there as many trees lying dead on the forest floor as there are standing? Like, are those approximately equal amounts? Or it started to seem like there were more trees lying down prostrate than standing up.
I mean, I don't have the answer, but it sounds like you formed this really intense relationship with your surroundings in the last week.
Yeah, I feel like really plugged into it. And I started to, the trees and their death, I guess, or their, you know, moving on to a different stage of their life cycle, it was so beautiful. The way that you can see something like that and just like meditate on it and sink into it, and then all of a sudden see whatever that is, that like passing on of that tree as something really beautiful, is what I'm attempting to capture now, hopefully doing a decent job of it.
Do you have a sense of what you would like to create now?
You know, I think when I go into a piece of art with a real strong sense of what I want it to be, it goes awry. It just is, it is never, I feel like when I'm real calm and I just kind of let it happen, it is ultimately a much better piece.
So it sounds like you've learned a lot about your surroundings and really just like being observant in nature. And I feel like a lot of people could really benefit from doing that. I think that sometimes there is a fear associated with just going out somewhere by yourself, or it sounds like you had someone with you.
Some of the time I did, and some of the time I was alone. And I definitely did have fear. I would say a combination of fear and exhilaration and sometimes not knowing the difference, and that is okay. But farther out on the trail, with a little bit of wind and maybe the sky starts to look like it's about to rain, and I'm sitting by myself thinking, like, I gotta get up and move because I'm kind of scared, you know? That happened too. And I don't know why, right? Like, just sometimes maybe it's just being alone, or maybe it is actually something about, like, the power of nature, or, you know, something more obvious like bears. But just, like, my mind making up what those two things might do. I mean, I think we all have tricky brains, but sometimes mind can just spin, right? So having to, like, shut that off and just tap into trees.
So in the past, how has nature informed your work?
That's a really good question. I feel like the organic patterns has been years in the making, but the way that I entered into art, I think the first thing that I loved about it was figure. I mean, kind of classically, like, there's just something about that. And that the way that Wilderness Workshop had posted this residency this year, they were looking for people who had taken up an interest in natural pattern and were working a bit more abstractly, or else that's how I read it.
Uh-huh.
I read the brief, and I thought, this is absolutely perfect. And I guess it worked. It was a good fit.
What was your biggest takeaway now that you're out of the woods and you're back in civilization?
I think the confidence to just take a vision and go for it. You know, if something sparks in you, like, this is a really interesting bit of path that I'm looking at. And somehow the way the shadow is hitting and the way the light is hitting and the way I know there's a valley behind me or whatever it is, even if it's just going to be like a Nike swoop on a page and that's the only thing you have to go on, this tiny wisp of an idea, just ride it, because it'll become something. Like, I feel like you have to trust those little, the thread. Right? Like, if you feel like you picked up a thread, just, like, pick it up.
That was Andy Korber, a local artist and architect participating in Wilderness Workshop's Artist in Wilderness program. This year's program has 5 artists participating, including Korber, with 2 more completing residencies with the nonprofit in the fall. For more information, visit wildernessworkshop.org. You're listening to Curated on Aspen Public Radio. Coming up, a local artist shares insight into plein air painting. But first, Michael Krauser is a photographer best known for his black and white photographs that merge fine art and documentary imagery. He has a new book out. It's called Mountain Ranch, and it chronicles 9 families working in what he calls a disappearing American tradition. I wanted to start off by asking you to describe your photographic voice. Like, what characterizes your work, and how did you come to find your voice in this visual medium?
Well, if I had to describe it, I would say that it has a softness to it, a darkness to it. There's soft edges, and there's very deep blacks in this photographic voice. There's a calmness to the work, even though there's sometimes intense subject matter. And there's some pretty formal composition to it as well. And I felt for a long time that my photographs are very much a reflection of myself. All the things that I've just described sort of describe my own speaking voice, but also sort of my personality as well. And I kind of came to find it by accident, but it was discovered as a reflection of myself by other people who were trying to describe my work and went on to tell me that they thought my work was a reflection of myself, which eventually I came to understand what they were talking about, and it became kind of the basis of a class that I teach called Finding Your Voice as a Photographer, whereas people make aesthetic choices and narrow down their aesthetic preferences to the point where maybe eventually their work is a reflection of themselves.
That's great. I can definitely see your style coming through in your new book, which does contain a series of black and white images of 9 ranching families across the state that represent about a decade of your work.
Yeah, I worked on this book called Mountain Ranch for 10 years. I started in 2006, and it started with just a trip out to this area in northwestern Colorado to photograph some ranchers during calving season. And I didn't know that it was going to be a book or an ongoing project, but the subject matter just really appealed to me and kind of made sense to me as a different disappearing culture and kind of a rough and earthy subject matter with rough and earthy work, people working with animals, working with the land. Yeah, it was very much in my wheelhouse as far as subject matter goes.
Speaking of animals, I think I hear a dog on your end.
There's definitely a dog, if not three of them, barking at the moment.
Okay.
That's okay. It's just the real world.
Yes. So what inspired you to take on this project and stick with it for so long?
Well, I was in a place of sort of a creative malaise, as I've been saying, after the death of my mother, who passed away in 2005. And my friends out here in Colorado invited me to come out and photograph their neighboring ranchers during calving season. And I was very hesitant to do so. I really was not in the mood to create or to make photographs or to do anything creative at all. And I was eventually convinced to come out. And the experience was very much rejuvenating for me. I found the people were great, and the setting was so beautiful, and the clean air, and I was really inspired by the kind of work that I was seeing as well, this hard work and this physical labor working with animals, and I just found that it was something I wanted to continue. I returned to the area later in that spring with some prints for the people that I had met, and I returned to watch a branding, and it was just really captivating. It was very intense and a little shocking for somebody that hasn't seen such a thing before, but I wasn't repulsed or repelled by it. I was actually very attracted to it and curious about it. It was, as I say, it was very intense, and I found that to be fascinating, and I took more pictures and found that it was really something that appealed to me as a subject to photograph and also just a lifestyle to learn about.
And the photographs that you depict in the book were all shot with black and white film and printed out in your darkroom. And this is a craft that you're pretty well known for.
Well, for one thing, when I started taking pictures, that was the only choice, was to shoot with film. You know, when I was 14 years old, there was no such thing as digital photography, so I learned to shoot with film. But I also really came to love working with film and printing in the darkroom. It's what I refer to as tactile photography, meaning that you can hold and touch every aspect of it, every step of it, from loading film into your cameras and rewinding it and processing it in liquid and stainless steel and drying it in air and considering it through glass and light and then printing it on paper. It's just very much a touchable, tactile craft. And I've said many times that I think my pictures probably have more in common with making mud pies or ceramics than they do with digital photography. But I do think that my method of making photographs is particularly suited to this subject because it is a traditional method of making photographs, and the subject is very much focusing on the traditional elements of traditional lives. So I think they kind of go hand in hand. You know, I don't know that the ranchers see that part of it, but it's my kind of perspective on the treatment of this topic. It makes sense perhaps why I'm attracted to their kind of life. You know, it is a very sensory way of life. It's all very rough and tumble and touchable, and there's all manner of sights and smells and such. And
yeah, that's very true. So what do you want people to take away from your work on documenting the ranches in Colorado?
Hopefully when people look through the whole collection, the whole book, that they'll come away with a sense of having a certain aesthetic experience, but also a cultural experience, also learning something about a way of life here in Colorado. And, you know, I see the subject as a traditional lifestyle in the mountains of Colorado, and I think that that's accessible to anyone that lives in Colorado.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
That was Michael Krauser sharing insights with me about his new book of photographs called Mountain Ranch. He will be speaking and signing copies at Explore Booksellers Tuesday, August 15th at 5:30 p.m. For more information, visit explorebooksellers.com. We now turn to Mike Odie. a local oil painter and resident artist at the Red Brick Center for the Arts in Aspen. I caught up with him last week, pre-plein air festival, to learn more about his technique and approach.
So Mike, tell me a little bit about what you are doing right now.
Well, I am in the middle of the park across from Rustique. It's trying to decide if it's going to be rainy or sunny, and it's done both in the last 5 minutes. And I am trying to paint the little White House, the restaurant, the White House restaurant, and capture a little bit of the Hunter Creek drainage that's above it in Red Mountain, and catch some of the sky. The sky is changing pretty rapidly today, but that's the way it is. The light changes all the time. So that's what I'm doing. My primary subject on this particular piece is the White House restaurant.
What are some of the challenges that you're facing? I know that you said that it's been raining on and off the last couple of minutes. How does that affect your...
Not too much, because I've got an umbrella over my painting so that it can't get wet. And I've got rain gear on so I don't get too wet. One of the things, when the weather is changing and the light is changing, going from cloudy to sunny in short intervals, when the light's out, you get all kinds of intense shadows, and when the clouds are out, you don't have any shadows. So you have to continue. You have to start at the beginning when you're doing your piece to decide, am I going to paint it with shadows or without? And a long time ago, a guy I took some art lessons from down in Mexico gave me a piece of advice which was very profound, and that's paint your shadows first and then they don't move on the canvas. So I blocked in the little white Victorian house, and then I've been blocking in Red Mountain and the Hunter Creek drainage, and so I'm blocking in the big pieces on the canvas. This is a 9x12 panel board that I'm painting on right now with oil. And I'm laying down big fields of color, and then I'll come back after I get it sort of covered with the paint, then I'll come back and start working on details.
When you are working on a plein air project sort of like this, you must have to focus your eyes on attention to detail. Is that ever challenging for you?
Well, I try to do the big stuff first, and sometimes you don't need a whole lot of details. You know, one of the things you have to sort of focus on from the beginning is where you want to end up, you know, what's your focal point, or a friend of mine calls it, where are the heroes in your piece? It's a good idea to have know where you're going with that. But sometimes there's a lot of detail, but I paint pretty loose, pretty broad brush. I'm using a pretty good size thick brush to paint with. And I'll eventually come back and put a few details in, but not a whole lot. I want the person who's viewing the piece to let their mind sort of imagine some of those details too.
What do people, maybe non-artists or people that just haven't been as exposed to art, what do they typically not understand about plein air, and what do you think that people should know about it? What do you think that, yeah.
Well, I think first of all, plein air essentially just means you're painting outdoors, and you know, it's sometimes it might be called alla prima, where you're in the moment, you're painting, and you're supposed to be painting sort of what you see, but you can change the details, and you know, you can get an inspiration like the little white house, and you know, on another day I might be painting a purple house, and I get it to arrange things the way I want to arrange them. Like what you see here that I've blocked out on this painting, I've removed a lot of the new brick aspen buildings so that I can get directly back to nature and see the trees, you know, along the Hunter Creek Valley. And
okay, yeah, I see that. There's only the White House Tavern in your painting.
Right. And you get to do that if you're the artist. You get to choose what you're doing. And what I see, you know, it's an interesting thing. What I see and what I think I'm painting, because I have a life experience and I have my own filter that I see my art through, everyone has their own filter, their own life experience, pluses and minuses. And so what I see and what somebody else sees may be two different impressions, and that's great.
What absolutely inspires you about getting out into nature and just painting what you see?
Well, it's very uplifting. I mean, sometimes I'll take off with my painting gear and my pickup truck, and I have no idea where I'm going. My wife says, "Where are you going?" I said, "I don't know."
And does she ever wonder?
I'm sure she does. But I'll go until I find something that I think is kind of cool to paint. And being outdoors, breathing the fresh air, you know, in Colorado, it's an amazing place to be. We have all kinds of different subject matter. You know, you can find just about anything you want. Landscape, skiscape, seascapes along the lakes and the rivers and stuff. When I'm out painting, and time doesn't exist. You know, it's just, it goes. You're painting along and all of a sudden you realize a couple of hours, sometimes 3 hours, has vanished. So it's a good thing.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to sit with me in the park today.
Thank you very much.
That was Mike Odey, oil painter and resident artist at the Red Brick Center for the Arts. He participated in the Plein Air Festival in Aspen this past weekend. To see more of his work, visit mikeodey.com. Boulder's Americana outfit, Grant Farm, is led by national flat-picking guitar champion Tyler Grant. Last year, they released their second LP called Kiss the Ground. This is Get in Line off that album.
Thank you. walk the righteous way. Just pay attention to the signs. If salvation's what you're looking for, then brother, get in line. Get in line.
That was Grant Farm, a four-piece Americana band out of Boulder. The band plays Belly Up Aspen tonight at 10 o'clock p.m. For more information, visit bellyupaspen.com. Here's what else is happening this week in the Valley. Tonight, Garrison Keillor and his crew will make a stop in Aspen as part of the National Love and Comedy Tour at the Benedict Music Tent at 7 o'clock p.m. Theater Aspen's productions of Hairspray and The World According to Snoopy continue on this week at the Hearst Theater in Rio Grande Park. For show dates and times, visit theateraspen.org. Tuesday, Anderson Ranch Arts Center's opening reception for the new exhibition, A Tree Is Not a Forest, takes place at the campus in Snowmass Village at 5 o'clock p.m. Also Tuesday, Aspen Words presents this month's writer-in-residence Shigozi Obiyama at 5:30 p.m. at Hooch Craft Cocktail Bar in Aspen. The Temporary in Basalt will host a screening of the film Monterey Pop at 8 o'clock p.m. Tuesday. And the Aspen Music Festival in School will premiere its operatic production of La Clemenza di Tito at 7 p.m. Tuesday, which will also run later this week Thursday and Saturday at the Wheeler Opera House. Wednesday, Aspen Institute presents Dr. Daniel Levitin, the neuroscientist, musician, and author of best-selling books, This Is Your Brain on Music and The World in Six Songs. He'll be discussing new research at 5 o'clock p.m. at Pepke Auditorium. Thursday, the Snowmass Free Concert Series presents the Otis Taylor Band on Fannie Hill starting at 5:30 p.m. On Sunday, the Aspen Festival Orchestra's final concert will take place in the Benedict Music Tent at 4 o'clock p.m. And Sunday, English musician Jacob Collier will perform at the Aspen Art Museum starting at 7 o'clock p.m. That's all that's curated this week. For more on arts and culture, tune into Morning Edition weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m. and visit us online at aspenpublicradio.org, where all episodes of this show live. I produced today's show with help from Kristen Kay. It was edited by Carolyn Zachariasen. Local musicians Greg Lout and Jason Patton wrote the show's theme tune, Omnicord Entrance. Special thanks to the Stefan Edlis and Gail Neeson Foundation, which aims to support the arts, community, and outreach. Continue to follow Curated APR on Facebook for news and updates on arts in the Valley. I'm Claire Woodcock at the Edlis Neeson Arts and Culture Desk. Thank you so much for listening. Curated is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.